You were listening to The Peaceful Planet Synthesized from Spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray. Listen in to The Peaceful Planet every Saturday at 12 noon Central to music from the angelic realms, including inspired songs from John Lennon, George Harrison, and Michael and the Band. This is show host Marcia McMahon inviting you to join us as we share messages from the Ascended Masters and the Archangels as we bring you into a higher vibration of love and peace for the planet. Hear my weekly interviews with cutting-edge world teachers and musical talent.
Do you like music, angels, and channeling? Are you spiritual, a psychic, or a healer? We are one on the Peaceful Planet Show at www.bbsradio.com every Saturday at 12 noon Central Time.
Welcome to the Peaceful Planet Show. This is your host, Marcia McMahon, and we have a fabulous show planned for our listeners today, so stay tuned. We are exploring past lives with Jesus and the book titled The Power of the Magdalene, and we are uncovering a fantastic, rich tradition of Christianity that has been totally suppressed by the Catholic Church and even other religious traditions, intentionally or otherwise. And all of this information comes to us through our great authors, Stuart Wilson and Joanna Prentice, who have written The Power of the Magdalene. And this is a fabulous book that you're going to want to hear more about from our authors. And the information about Stuart and Joanna is posted on more about this program. If you're just tuning in to BBS Radio today, you can read their bios. So welcome, Joanna and Stuart, and if you could each share a little bit about yourself. I have all these pages here, but I seem to have misplaced the bio. So if you can just share briefly, one of you go ahead and start.
Okay. If I could just say a little perhaps about myself. I spent 20 years working in advertising, and the big change in my life came when I joined Joanna at the Starlight Center with a focus on healing and expansion of consciousness. That opened the door to a whole new world of groups and workshops, and we even did a couple of firewalks too. And when we began working on past lives, the accounts started to overlap, and connections mm-hmm. between old friends became an ongoing theme for us.
Wonderful. Joanna, if you could briefly, in a couple sentences, describe your background and then how you became a past life regressionist, please.
Right. Basically, I was born in southern India and then returned, age 3, to my family's home in Scotland. And later, I lived in Hong Kong and then for 10 years in Australia. And it was while I was in Australia that I learnt to meditate. And what happened is I started to remember past lives when I was meditating and dreams. And I did a course in humanistic psychology, and I found it, you know, rather narrow, having started to remember past lives, and I realized there was a lot more to things. So then I, at the same time, I did a training in hypnotherapy and past life, and that was in the 1990s, so it's quite a bit of a long time ago now. And as well as that, I did several different healing.
I'm sorry, something blurred out and I missed the last sentence.
I think I was saying about how I did a diploma in humanistic psychology, hypnotherapy, mm-hmm. and past life therapy.
Right, and I wanted
several different healing modalities.
Wonderful. Now, I wanted to compliment you on your skill as a past life regressionist, and some of these past lives regarding Yeshua or Jesus Christ came to you all at the same time in perfect divine synchronicity, and you began to see that there was a mission involved in this, and that the angelic realms or the higher guides, Yeshua, Mary Magdalene herself, and others wanted to convey this information to humanity. And this was all apparently happening in the 90s, way before the Da Vinci Code, huh?
Yes, it was.
Oh, yes.
I think the Da Vinci Code opened up the possibility for a book to be published. For I feel, well, our first book, which we've talked about in the previous program, that came through in the early 90s, and I just think it was ahead of its time. But I feel the female disciples that have come and given the information in the second book, it all had to happen after the Da Vinci Code. The Da Vinci Code opened people's consciousness and awareness so that the information about the Divine Feminine could really come forth at the moment. And I feel the second book is very much of its time now, which is why I think that we're getting a lot of readers, and particularly female readers, you know, very excited about it. But of course, this has come through in the last, what, about 5 years, I think, the information in the second book.
Yes. Now, I want our listeners to be aware that for the past 5 years, I have hosted the Peaceful Planet Show, and I began exploring aspects of the Da Vinci Code myself when I began hosting the show, and always felt a connection to Jesus. And then myself, I was regressed 2 years ago and discovered that I, too, was a female disciple. So it's really fascinating for me because I really didn't have a clue about this for a while until I began to suspect, and then little details would come into me, and then I channeled Jesus, and he gave me the information that I was Martha. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have done an excellent job in this book of explaining the number of female disciples that Jesus had, delineating the first 12 female disciples. I was going over that part last night. And then, of course, talking about all these other female disciples that we don't know about. But the primary emphasis, of course, is on Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary. Mm-hmm. And you uncover a wealth of information that is totally removed or edited out or whatever from the Gospels. But I know Mary Magdalene herself has channeled messages through me, and if you'll permit me some point in the program, I will read my message because it relates so well to your work. But at the moment, I would like you to, I mean, you've just discussing this is the tip of the iceberg, and I really want our readers to go to your website and buy the book, or go to Ozark Mountain Publishing and buy the book. Give us your website again, and let us know where our readers can find your book.
Yes, it's foundationforcrystalchildren.com.
Foundationforcrystalchildren.com.
Foundationforcrystalchildren.com. And you can get the book from our publisher's website if you look up ozarkmt.com. You can buy the book there, or, of course, it's available through bookshops as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon, need we say.
Yeah, wonderful. So, you know, it's a captivating read, and it's hard for me to know exactly where to begin, but I'm going to ask one of you to begin explaining the roles of the major female disciples, if you would perhaps speak of Mary Anna or Mary Magdalene and their different personalities, because this information, I guess, came through when you were under hypnosis, correct, Stuart? And this was channeled from the angel Alariel, is this correct?
This is Alariel, yes, speaking through me. And quite a lot of information came through, some of which really surprised us because we weren't prepared for it. It came fresh in a way. And the personalities of the two Marys were quite different, dramatically different. Alariel described Mary Anna as a person of quiet and calm authority. In the case of Mother Mary, there was a great sense of clarity about her, and her dedication to the light shone forth in everything that she did. She acted as the spiritual anchor and foundation for the group of first circle female disciples, being well qualified to do so as she had been a high initiate since the days of Akhenaton in Egypt. So she is a person who had developed over a very long period of time and reached very high levels long before that period 2,000 years ago. In
well,
Hong Kong,
you know, that's fascinating. I do remember a lifetime in the court of Akhenaten, too, so I'd be curious.
Yes.
If you do happen to know what character she was, I'd be curious. But we can discuss that another time. Tell us a little bit Mary Magdalene and her personality, then.
Yes, Mary Magdalene had a very different temperament. Alariel describes her as being powerful, eager, enthusiastic. The fire of her total commitment to the light burned within her like a bright flame. She was a passionate advocate for truth and justice, but in her zeal might occasionally overstate the case, something that Mary Anna would never do. If Mary Anna's empowerment expressed itself in her poise and her restraint, Mary Magdalene's empowerment manifested in a confident and joyful outpouring of her energy and her love. So two very different characters, two very empowered and wonderfully wise spiritual teachers, but very different in character.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I do get a mental picture of both of them as you describe them. And I'm, you know, going into my own past life as you speak, but of course you've got all the details and all the information, and it's so well researched. And you found, Joanna, now I want to turn to you, some people who remembered being part of this group that were regressed and came in with various amounts of information. It seems to me that the female disciples were carrying this divine feminine energy, and they all had very supportive roles. They all seemed to be physically related to the family of Mother Mary or Mary Anna, as she is described in your work. So tell us about some of these people who just appeared on your doorstep who were found to be disciples. I mean, this is really interesting information.
Well, basically what happened was most of them read our first book, and then they got triggered by that, and therefore they came in and told the story. But there were some other people who just had a feeling that they'd had a life with Jesua, as we prefer to call him, and they just came for regression, not knowing whether they were connected with the story or not. Because while the story was coming through about the female disciples, we had other past life other people coming to do past life therapy who might not have a story to do with the female disciples. Actually, I'm quite spaced out because I'm getting a lot of energy coming through to me. I feel that, you know, like, since I was talking to you, I was getting loads of energy through, so I don't know whether it'll come out in this talk. Anyway, there was Mary Anna, of course, the mother of Jesua, and Mary Magdalene, who we've talked about. There was Helena Salome, an aunt of Jesua, and the wife of Lazarus. There was Mary Jacobi, an aunt of Jesua and the wife of Copas, and it was Abigail, the daughter, cousin of Jesua, Martha of Bethany, who I think you know a little bit about.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Mary, the sister of Martha, Mariam Joanna, a cousin of Jesua. Now, Mariam Joanna, I'm fairly sure she has come for regression. But when she came to the regression, it was after the book went to print, so this
really
might come out later.
Wow. So, then, you know, I feel very drawn into this energy, and I keep thinking that I've got to have you do a past life regression on me. I've just got to find a way to do it. And we talked about doing that over Skype, but maybe I need to actually come to England and meet you and do it. I don't know. I just feel there's got to be more. Of course, you know, Lazarus would have been my brother, so there's got to be all that information about him being raised. But again, I don't have any recollection of that at the moment. But if you can share a little bit more on the details that were uncovered from some of these other female disciples, I'd be fascinated to know, even if they aren't yet printed in the book, as long as this isn't confidential information, because I know you do take a confidential.
Yeah, it's something I have to always be aware of. I mean, since the publication of the second book, there's a lot more information coming through, and some of the people, you know, are not ready to go public. Whether they'll go public in the future or not, I don't know. But going back to the ones that are in the book, because we had Laura Clare, a sister of Joanna. Now, I think she's got a whole chapter in the book, and that's very interesting.
Yes, I was fascinated that Laura Clare was involved in Jesus' healing in the tomb. And, of course, your story, and I want to explain to our listeners, those that may be new to the program or new to these theories, a little bit of background here, and please help me out wherever I'm needing it here. But last week I had a fascinating guest on. His name is Ed Martin, and he wrote the book, King of Travelers, Jesus' Lost Years in India, where he did a photo documentary and a documentary film talking about Jesus having survived the crucifixion and walking to India and Kashmir, and that now he's discovered even a tomb where Jesus is buried there. And Jesus exists in all the legends and the lore of the Buddhist tradition and the Hindu tradition. And so all of this is coming out on my program, and it's amazing the way the pieces are falling together so perfectly. But again, Joanna, going back to your work, is there an outstanding female disciple who was able to give you a wealth of information through the regression that you maybe wanted to highlight for our listeners?
Well, Laura Clare, her regression is extremely interesting. The lady who brought forth the information, actually she's a past life therapist herself. She had a wealth of information. She told us all about her aspect or her perspective of what happened in the cave after Jesus was brought down from the cross. We knew that he had survived the cross because that story is all told in our first book, but this was more information. And down to that, she said, oh, we used a little yellow flower. And when she went back home, she looked up this little yellow flower, and it turned out to be calendula. Well, calendula homeopathically is really good for helping wounds to heal. So,
wow.
You know, there were
so
lots
she
of
used
things,
the calendula on the wound in the side?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah, that's right.
Yes, and they used crystals, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, about these crystals, I'm very interested in this because I have a lady in my spiritual study group, Reiki group that I do, who is a crystal healer. And I, in my regress state, thought I saw her at the Last Supper, and I said to her, Rose, I think you were at the Last Supper. I think you need to look into this. And she did some meditation, and sure enough, she remembered being also a disciple of Jesus. So she works with crystals. I want to connect to this crystal thing. And I know the crystal tradition goes further back into Atlantean times. And if you can connect that for us, Stuart, I think you have the knowledge on the crystals.
Yes, that's quite right. A lot of information came basically from the order of Melchizedek. The Melchizedek's worked through a very ancient people called the Kalu, who were basically the last remnants of the Atlantean people. And they acted as messengers going from one Athenian community to another. They brought a lot of information on the use of crystals, not only for healing, they also used crystals to grow crops in otherwise a very unfertile land. So there was a whole crystal technology, and that really is entirely related to the Atlantean skills that were passed down through the ages, really. And that gave the Essenes a big advantage over the conventional Jews, the Pharisees and Sadducees, who simply didn't have access to that information.
Now, basically, you trace the spiritual heritage of the Essenes. The Essenes, of course, were the Jewish society that was the prophetic aspect of Judaism that anticipated a teacher of righteousness. And they carried a mystical tradition. They were one of the mystery schools. But you also highlight the mystery schools in Egypt, mm-hmm. and then you trace the lineage all the way back to the Isis schools, and then further back into the Atlantean mystery schools and healing schools there. So all of these ancient wisdom traditions are part of what we call the mystery schools. And then, of course, you talk about the power of the crystals and that there were actual crystals set into Jesus' tomb and there were crystals around Jerusalem. So all this had been planned eons in advance of Jesus' crucifixion. And I thought that part of the book was just riveting because from an observer's point of view or a reader, a person who's reading the Gospels and sees how quickly the events unfold and how he's condemned to death and then the crucifixion unfolds and then Christianity is born. But in between all that, there's all this background information that you were able to unearth regarding the use of the crystal in Jerusalem and another one somewhere else. And tell us about the lay of the land and how this was all planned and who was responsible for placing all these crystals and how were they used.
This was really the order of Melchizedek briefing the Essene communities. From the time they set up the Essene communities, about 150 BC, it was a priority from the very beginning to start working on what we would recognize as energy lines running along the earth. We would call them ley lines today, and the Order of Melchizedek briefed the Essenes to strengthen the ley lines so that they focused in on Jerusalem. There was a triad, three northern communities, Essene communities in the north. There were three Essene communities in the south near the Dead Sea, and both these series of communities linked together through a ley line system focused on the area around Jerusalem. And all this was in preparation of the coming teacher of righteousness who would require support at a very critical time when these events unfolded. This gave the Essenes an enormous advantage over the Pharisees who were reacting to events as they unfolded from day to day. The Essenes were working decades, sometimes more than 100 years in advance. This was an enormous advantage to have that kind of far-seeing wisdom to call upon.
And this is so fascinating, the way you detail this and how Spirit had planned the incarnation of all these different female disciples as well as, you know, male disciples. And even going back further than that, I do recall reading one of Carolyn Ever's books, and she talks about the preparation in Rome. And I can remember another lifetime I had in Rome around the royal family there. And even that was intentional in that the building of the Roman roads allowed the way or the word to be spread once once Christianity came into its existence. But, of course, the removal of all of the female gospels is really distressing. I've read aspects of the Gospel of Mary, which is, originally an Essene text, and our listeners want to go online and type in the Gnostic Gospels, you will bring up a whole selection of Gospels, Gospels by Philip and Gospel of Mary and Gospel of Thomas. All these people were associated with the inner mystery school of the Essenes, and they were all around the wisdom of Mary Magdalene and the development of the intuitive part of the psyche, which has been totally repressed and called the work of the devil in the Catholic Church, of course. But it's nothing could be further from the truth.
Absolutely. And it was a great distortion of the truth, which is only now starting to be corrected and put right. Alario says at one stage, "It is one of the great tragedies of Western culture that all knowledge of the female disciples of Jeshua has been lost, and it is now time to restore that knowledge."
So, and I confirm that. Sorry, please say it again. I missed that, Stuart.
I was just saying that we feel our work fits into that greater picture. That other groups obviously are working towards this. And a number of female disciples. Bear in mind there were 72 female disciples, 72 male disciples, a lot of disciples And a lot of people will be coming forward to tell their story now. It's a big story. It's a very big story. It's much larger than the historical record would suggest.
Yes, exactly. Now, I know from being an art historian that it was Constantine in about 350 A.D. or 325 A.D. when they convened the First Council of Nicaea, where they decided what books were the canon, and basically they chose the four Gospels, and they got rid of all the other Gospels. So then those Gospels that were written by Mary, that were revered by the monks in Egypt, when the monks found out that these were cast out of that particular group of canonical works, they were ordered to destroy the Gospels, but instead they placed them in clay jars and set them out in the desert because they revered them, and it was only in this century that they were rediscovered. So all this rediscovery of actual factual documents that have been deliberately written out of the record, it's just so totally amazing. So what we're going to do right now is take a break and listen to a song in honor of our guests. It's called Holy Grail Divine by Richard Shulman, and I know you'll enjoy it. And when we come back, we're going to open the phone lines and let our listeners call in with questions. So stay tuned on the Peaceful And we're back. You're listening to The Peaceful Planet. We have wonderful guests today with us, Joanna Prentice and Stuart Wilson, and we're discussing their book, The Power of the Magdalene. And we're going to open up our phone lines right now, and we understand that we have a caller. Our phone lines are 888-815-9756 if you'd like to call in and ask a question. I'm also going to be channeling a message from Mary Magdalene today. So, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Marcia dear.
Hello, and who? With whom am I speaking?
This is Rose.
Oh, Rose, hello. Well, thank you for calling. And what can I, how can I answer your question today?
Well, I was listening to a talk about the use of the crystals, and as you know, being a crystal healer, any subject regarding that does fascinate me. And as you said earlier, I do remember a lifetime during Jesus' lifetime, and I remember my name was Judith. I remember Claire was my teacher in the healing arts. Now, one of the things that I do remember was being in the cave during the healing, the burial chamber, but I don't think I participated in the healing. I think I was just there for support. But one of the things I had a question about, it seems to me, according to what I can remember from my past life, after Jesus' healing, a lot of the Essenes abandoned their villages in that area. Now, it seems to me I remember my family in particular ended up going to Turkey. And I was wondering if anybody else had channeled any information regarding the migration of Essenes out of the area, and if they, anybody had mentioned some of the Essenes going to Turkey.
Either one of you can answer that question.
That's interesting. Yes, I think there was a mass migration from the point of the crucifixion. It got very difficult for the Essenes and their communities. The Pharisees realized that their chance had come. In a sense, Yeshua being there had protected all his people. When he was no longer around, the Pharisees seized the chance to persecute the Essenes. They'd been wanting to do this for some time, but they really made life very difficult, and a lot of Essenes moved out of that area. Some maybe to Turkey. We don't have detailed information on that.
I do.
Right.
Some of them went to Ephesus. I don't have any more information than that, but they went to Ephesus, mm-hmm. which is in Turkey, and I don't know which group went, but I've mm-hmm. heard that. I think from one of my past life subjects.
Yes.
I confirm that there was a general diaspora of all the Essenes after the crucifixion.
Yes.
They were heavily persecuted. I know that.
Oh, yes. They realized mm-hmm. they had to go. The Pharisees were determined to eliminate them, and they went. A lot went to what was then Gaul, is now France, and ended up in the Languedoc region where Mary Magdalene made her home, of course. Others went to Britain because there were connections with what is now Glastonbury, what was the Isle of Avalon at that time, and the Druids certainly welcomed them there.
Now, your research into Mary Magdalene's visit to Glastonbury and her influence on the... there was another priestess cult there that was part of the Druidic culture in Britain, and I forget the name of that.
Priestess of Avalon. Yes.
She was priestess of Avalon, too?
No, she had a big impact on the priestess.
Oh, she had an impact on them, yeah.
They were the female equivalent of the Druids at that time, and because Mary Magdalene had such a deep wisdom based on the Isis tradition, she was able really to explain to the priestesses of Avalon what their most fundamental rituals meant at a very deep level. That, of course, amazed them. If somebody can tell you the deeper meaning behind ceremonies which people have been doing for a number of years, that this would be just an amazing experience. And that just indicates the depth of her knowledge and her wisdom and the impact she had on a wide range of people.
Now, you go into the Isis tradition also in the book. And Rosalind, did we answer your question? And would you like to hang up so we can allow another caller to call?
Yes, thank you
okay,
so much
thank
for
you.
That.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll let her hang up, and we'll give out the number again. It's 888-815-9756. And I was going to get into that line of thought about... Oh, apparently we have another caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
How are you Hello. Today, and what's your question, caller?
This is Brad from Missouri.
Brad, glad you decided to call in, and please phrase your question for us.
Okay. I want to thank Joanne and Stuart for all the good work they're doing, and I'd like to know if there's any way they can tell the difference between people that have had an actual incarnation or maybe just an imprint with experience from the time of their book, of the Jesus and the Essenes. And I'd like to thank them for personally communicating with me through the email, and I cherish their friendship.
Well, this is really great to hear you, Brad, because we've never actually spoken before, but we really thank you for the support you've given us. And in answer to your question, when I'm working with somebody, there is an energy in the room when somebody is really connected with that life, and also you can tell by the body movements, and you can tell to a certain extent by the information that they bring through. But even those people who have an imprint, they have a valuable part to play. So I don't like to stay in judgment about who was and who wasn't. You know, if they're all light workers and working to the greater good, that's the most important thing. But obviously when we put the past life regressions in our book, we do use discernment about that.
And yes, I think that's an interesting question. And I also think that everything that you've researched is quite genuine, and it corroborated by other outside sources, like the author I had on the show last week, who talks mm-hmm. about Jesus having survived the crucifixion, which is really radical thinking, and you don't come across this very often because of the dogma mm. that we've been raised with. But anyway, thank you for calling.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you for calling, Brad, and thank you for your wonderful question, which really contributed to our second book.
Thank you, Stuart. It's good to hear your voices.
Okay, it's nice to hear from you.
See you on email.
we'll email you.
I think that he's absolutely right. He commends you for your beautiful work and your commitment to doing this job of regression editing. And we have another caller. Hello, caller. How can we help you today?
Hi. Do you take personal questions?
Yes, I do take personal questions. If you'd want to make it brief, because we are talking about their book, and phrase your question ahead of time, please.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to just see if the angels have a message, or should I be specific?
I think I'd be specific, and I need to have your name if I'm going to work with you.
My name is Pat.
Pat. Okay, Pat.
And I've always had an issue of always fearful of ending up on the street. I'm wondering if you can see me in a home in the future, a secure home finally.
Gee whiz. Let me connect to your vibration a minute and your circumstances. Okay, dear?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm being shown that there will be housing coming along very quickly, and that this is only a temporary situation. And there are angels working with you, two in particular. One I feel may be a mother's vibration. I don't know if you have a mother or a grandmother in spirit, but
yes,
someone in spirit is really working, and they're holding your hand, they're holding your arm, and I'm being, it's almost as if they're taking you right to the front door, and this is only a temporary circumstance. And I'm going to pray for you today and ask all of my guides and angels to also be with you in this housing search. And
thank
I'm going
you.
To say many blessings. Yes, you will
thank
find the home.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, dear, and many blessings
thanks,
to you
bye-bye.
With a home. God bless.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, all of this is so fascinating, and I'm really feeling spirit with me. Would now be an okay time for me to go into my channeling of Mary Magdalene?
Absolutely fine.
Okay, and this is from a previous message, of course, and I'm going to read it and ask her spirit to come through as well. So we're connecting to Mary Magdalene here, and she's saying, my child and friend, it is true of our romantic relationship. I was the woman who sat at the feet of the Master Yeshua, described in your Bible as the house of Martha and Mary. I was the receptive one to him and fell in love with the Master Yeshua. We held a friendship for many years before our romance blossomed shortly before the crucifixion. Those were both wonderful and terrible days. I gave birth to the child of Jesus and named her Sarah and raised her in Egypt and then France. Because of the fiery persecution of all the followers of Christ or Yeshua in the Roman Empire or Gaul as France was known then, our identity was a secret to all but a select few. Sarah was my sunshine child and my consolation in losing the love of my life, my husband, Yeshua. She provided me an outlet of joy. I did write down the teaching of the Master recorded in my gospel. However, that book, too, has been distorted by the Church Fathers. I am of the divine feminine, and I speak with compassion about the power of the sacred feminine. It was the mission of the Master Yeshua to bring me to leadership in our circles, which did occur with the apostles who supported me. It was later removed and my memory denigrated to that of a harlot. Call upon me for strength, compassion, and for help in childbirth. My sacred bloodline exists even today in France and England, and I leave you with a thought. History is told by the ones who control power. Look again within yourselves to the kingdom of God, Goddess within for truth. My love to all who hear and recognize me today, Mary of Magdalene. So what a message that is. And it's a beautiful message, reminding
us it's a beautiful message.
Of the divine feminine. And what you are expressing in your book is all about the divine feminine and how we need to balance the energy between the masculine aspect of God, which would be Yeshua, and the divine feminine aspect of Mary Magdalene or Mother Mary. And this whole Mary Magdalene tradition has been totally written out of history. And I'm so delighted that you have gone to the effort that you have to research her and to, you know, bring her to the honored position that she truly was among the original disciples of Yeshua. It's almost as if I feel that she was the counterpart to him and she was the partner to him.
Absolutely. There's a really interesting passage from Olario where he talks about the balance between the original church, the outer church, and the inner mystery school. It was intended that there should be both. And he says, is it too late now to heal the rift, to embrace both the form and the life within a twofold balanced system of church and mystery school? Will masculine structure acknowledge the importance of feminine wisdom, and will the heir of Mary Magdalene stand forth to balance the heir of Peter? I think that's very striking, because the balance has been lost over the years. It was intended that the outer church would actually protect the inner mystery school, whereas sadly, in the end, it was the outer church structure which persecuted the Gnostics, who were the heir to that mystery school tradition.
And you've done so much wonderful research. I mean, you even talk about the Languedoc region and the existence of the Cathars, because, of course, we know that through your research and through the channeling and through these lost records, basically, that Mary Magdalene ended up in France. And there's a whole tradition. The French people revere her. The French people look to her as a goddess. and they had a very different view than the Pope, for instance. And you talk about some regressions that you came across with a person who was a monk and then another person who was a Cathar child who was mm-hmm. burned at the stake. I mean, the Catholic Church went in and deliberately destroyed these people because they were practicing a mystical form of Christianity. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Absolutely.
But talk about these regressions, if you can.
Yes, this was our friend Kathy, who is a past life regressionist, actually.
Uh-huh.
She lives quite close to us here in the West Country in England. She had this quite remarkable life as Pierre, a monk in France, and they saw the Cathars in quite a different way from the Roman Catholic Church centered on Rome. As far as the priests in Rome were concerned, the only feminine influence they were focusing on was Mother Mary. They were using Mother Mary as, if you like, an icon of a very compliant and docile woman who would follow the line laid down by the early church fathers. Whereas in France, they had a totally different tradition. They had a tradition of Mary Magdalene as a major spiritual teacher,
mm-hmm.
as an apostle who was of the very first rank. He was a brilliant disciple, wonderful teacher, remarkable speaker, and who generated a vast following because she was such an amazing, charismatic figure. And all this didn't suit the church fathers in Rome who wanted all the veneration to be given to Mother Mary. It just did
exactly.
not fit in with their political
well,
view.
Well, I think that we've just got to end it here because we're almost at the end of the show. But I want to give out your website and your book again and mine. I encourage our listeners to visit my website at www.DianaSpeaksToTheWorld, where you can read messages from Princess Diana, who is another aspect of the Divine Feminine, and who, by the way, shared a lifetime in that lifetime with Yeshua as his grandmother, she told me. So that's interesting. And then you can go to their website at, again, Stuart, if you could give out the website and the title of the book for our listeners.
Yes, it's foundationforcrystalchildren.com. And
Foundation
the title
for
of the book
Crystal
is,
Children.
Mm-hmm. And the title of the book is Power of the Magdalene, and the subtitle is The Hidden Story of the Women Disciples.
And it's a wonderful read, and I can't recommend it enough. And it was such an honor to, again, be part of this wonderful energy, remembering these wonderful memories of Jesus as he walked the earth plane. And thank you for your research. We're going to close out with Ave Maria by Simone Awina. Enjoy the music and join us in a month. We're going off air. Peaceful Planet resumes in July at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're going to have a fascinating guest on July the 11th. Mark it on your calendar. Thank you so much, and many blessings to both of you today for joining us.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you very much, Martha.
Yes, many blessings, and let's speak again on the phone. I'm going to call you later if that's okay today.
Of course.
Fine.
All right.